that a lot of couples confuse the definition of same team because the thing is that most of the time, whenever couples get into an argument, they can use the word, hey, you're not on this, we're not on the same team, or you're not seeing where I'm coming from, as a way to try to get their partner to agree with them, right? And what we
Yes.
have discovered when it comes to partnership and being married, is that yes, being on the same team is important. However, if that means that you're losing your autonomy and you start to feel resentful towards your partner, then you're not working as the same team because you're not honoring
Yeah.
the other person, you're not respecting the other person.
Welcome to the Live Your Best Marriage podcast, where cross-cultural Christian couples learn to stop fighting each other and start facing the world together. So if you feel torn between your spouse and your family, start by taking the United Front quiz at liveyourbestmarriage.com/quiz to see exactly where your marriage is vulnerable to family and cultural pressure. I'm your host, Pastor Shayo, and let's jump in. Is being on the same team killing your marriage? I'm excited about this conversation because at Live Your Best Marriage, we teach couples to become a united front. Today I have Kristen and Roger, and before I introduce them, they say that being on the same team can actually be killing modern marriages. And although that sounds like a contradiction, I suspect that they're really not arguing against unity. They are warning couples against turning marriages into a management partnership where attraction, honesty, and individuality disappear. So today I want to explore how couples can stand together without becoming roommates, co-workers, and managers of each other. So today I'm joined by Kristen and Roger Mansourian. Kristen has spent years working as a wedding planner, watching couples prepare for beautiful weddings while they were unprepared for marriage that followed. And Roger helps couples finance their first home and has seen what money reveals about relationships behind closed doors. And together, they help couples have honest conversations about money, emotions, and family patterns that they bring to their marriage. And they are creators of the 8 Money Dates, an experience designed to help couples talk about money in a more honest and connected way. Kristen and Roger, welcome to Live Your Best Marriage.
Thank you for having us.
We're very excited to talk today.
Thank you. Yes. So at Live Your Best Marriage, we talk about a united front. And you say that being on the same team can actually be killing a marriage. What exactly do you mean by that?
So we actually have a really great story of how we really live by this value and this version of same team. Essentially what happened was that my husband and I were invited to a wedding together, and last minute, I wouldn't say last minute, but for me, I was not very close to the bride. He was older to the groom, and I decided that I didn't want to go to the wedding anymore. And becoming a mom has made me realize what my priorities were. And because I didn't feel super close to this couple, especially with the bride, I didn't want to go. And because I worked in weddings for so long, I know how sacred a union is. And I didn't want to perform, right? And I knew that if I were to go to this wedding, not only would I be spending my time there instead of with my daughter, it didn't make sense for me to go. So I declined the invitation. And before I did that, I spoke to Roger and I told him, hey, I really don't want to go to this wedding. And he was a little bit surprised by it, but we worked together pretty well because he respected my choice. And we've had a conversation because what would probably happen with most couples would be that Roger would be like, no, babe, we have to save face.
Have to go.
Yeah, we have to go. Yep. Let's just suck it up. Let's just do it, right? And then it would probably become where maybe I would do that and I would have a lot of resentment, right? And I knew that, which is why I was pretty firm with my decision. And I allowed him to have autonomy to go on his own. So if he wanted to go to the wedding, I didn't make it mean that he was not supporting me. I made it, yes. I knew I had a lot of faith that if he chose to go, it was because he wanted to honor the friendship that he had with the groom. This was a really great example of how we work together in a way as a team, but it just is not exactly what people would picture. People would picture, okay, it's you either win or lose, right?
Or she could have said, we're not going. We're not going.
I don't want to go. We are not going.
We're not going. And then I would have been resentful. And then if I forced her to go, she would have been resentful. So,
yes. Yeah. And we had a really honest conversation. I was very vulnerable with him saying that I really just didn't want to go. And I was very glad that as my husband, he really heard me. He really respected my choice instead of having to force me to do something I didn't want to do. And yeah.
And that's very important that although you are doing two things, but in a way you are still on the same team because you are respecting each other's decisions, but you are working together. That's what I'm taking.
Yes, exactly.
So you're still united, yes.
And that's the thing is that most people could see it as it not being united. So what ended up happening was that when we told the bride and groom that we were not attending, they basically uninvited both of us, right?
It's irrelevant.
I see what you mean.
I was still going to go.
Yes, exactly. This is the point that we want to make is that my husband was still planning on going to the wedding because he had a relationship with the group. And I was really okay with it because I didn't want my choice to affect his friendship with him. But anyways, it still ended up being where they didn't like what we did. And it was a little bit of a drama, but I'm really glad that it happened because it really showed us the type of people that we wanted to surround ourselves. And also it showed us this dynamic that we could disagree on something and still be.
Yeah, I would even call it an acceptance. I honored and accepted her decision. And she accepted my decision that I still wanted to go. So in that way, we were still connected. We're still bonding. We're still connected, even though it's in different directions or different choices. Mm-hmm. But it actually feels really good when your partner can honor your decision, even if they disagree.
Yes. And I want to say one last thing, and this is straight for the women, like the women that are listening in. And that is most women would probably feel like they want to, I wouldn't use the word control. I feel like it's a little bit too heavy of a word, but most women do feel like they want their partner to agree with them, right? So most women in this situation would want their husbands to be like, okay, I won't go either, right? I support you. I don't want to go. But I want to encourage women to actually give their husbands the respect that and have faith in their husband that they will make the right decision, right? And that it doesn't affect their relationship. And that's how much faith I have in my husband that no matter whatever choice that he makes, I believe that it will be the right choice for him and our marriage because he respects me. And that's something that I think all women should have in their heads is expecting the best from their partner.
And that's very important, expecting the best because most of us are raised with expecting the worst.
Yeah.
And that you are basically controlling that whole situation because you already expect the worst. Mm. Maybe from the way you were raised or from the family of origin, you already programmed to expect the worst. So it tells a lot when somebody says expecting the best from your husband.
You're right.
And Kristen, you have seen a lot of weddings being performed. And after watching so many couples prepare for weddings, what patterns made you realize that many people were preparing for the event, but really not for the marriage?
I have been in the industry for a very long time. And I think that it's not completely the fault of the couple. I think that especially women were raised as little girls to believe that the wedding is the most important day of our lives. Based off of the movies that we watch, a lot of the time we think that it is a performance, right? And sadly, in our culture, weddings have become a performance. And I'm not saying every single couple is performing their wedding. I do think that there are couples out there that truly love each other and they see their wedding as a very sacred act. But essentially, because we're both from LA, I worked in weddings where I saw couples that would get married and divorced within 3 months.
Wow.
Spend 1 year planning their entire wedding for one day, they would spend hours deciding on the type of flowers that they would have at their reception, but they didn't talk about their marriage. They didn't prepare for it. So
they're married.
Very fascinating.
So what conversations are they really avoiding? Are they avoiding the money conversation? What exact conversation are they avoiding?
I think that it's hard for couples to talk about deep conversations prior to getting married. I think that for that whole year, they've just been trained to talk about the event and thinking about their guests. A lot of the couples that I worked with were so worried about what their guests will think about them, like where it will be. It's all focused on other people, what other people think about them, the Instagram photos, just appearance, right? And couples actually talk about the real conversations, whether that's money, whether what does life look like after marriage and their wedding day. It is going not refusing to go deeper because it's not fun, right? It's hard. Marriage is hard.
And just talking about what conversations, because we work with a lot of cross-cultural couples, Christian couples, and one of the questions we like them to ask before marriage is, do you already have any expectations of helping your parents, helping your siblings, helping your relatives? Because some couples come into the marriage, but they are still expected to pay for sibling school fees, pay for build a house back home and things like that, which the other partner didn't even know that was a thing. Mm. So the more open they are, yes, you are thinking about the wedding, but also after the wedding, what are the expectations that this person is coming into the marriage from their family of origin?
And so to answer that question, I think that it's really important to talk about those things, even when you're dating, right? Like when you have decided to be in a very serious, committed relationship, these are when you can have those conversations. And Roger and I come from completely different backgrounds. So we definitely had our differences in the beginning, and it took a lot of trial and error for us to get to where we are today.
Yes. And Roger, you work a lot with couples who are buying their first home and you help them through their mortgage process. So what does that whole mortgage process reveal about a couple that may not be obvious to the couple before this whole process started?
What I've noticed is working with couples, I usually see a couple different styles. So one style of couple is one spouse takes the lead and just does everything. I rarely speak with the other spouse. They're not involved. They're just letting one person just kind of take the lead. And then the other is it's a united front. They're joint. They're both on the call. They're both on the Zoom. They're both involved, right? Because it's a big decision. Like the wedding, a house is one of the biggest purchases that people are typically going to make. So it's when I see the couples that are both engaged, they're both part of the process. They're both asking questions. Those are usually the couples that are in a really good financial situation because I see everything, right? So every couple dynamic is different. Some couples like one person to take the lead, but generally what I found is when couples are both involved in the process, that's usually the best experience. Even if one spouse is going to make the final decision, if one spouse is more educated on finances and but it's nice to have the other person still a part of the process and can get that experience as well.
Yes. And so what happens when one person discovers that there's new debt they never knew about, there's a lot of spending that they never found out, but you help uncover this information? What really happened?
Oh man, I recently talked to a couple where they were not on the same page. So they own multiple properties. They want to buy another property, like a third property. And the two other properties that they own, they just couldn't agree on if they want to keep it or sell it. What I did like about that couple is they were very respectful to each other's decision. It's kind of like what we discussed earlier. The husband wanted to sell, wanted to pay off all their debt, buy one dream home or one home that they're going to have for 20 years. And the wife preferred to keep one of the properties because it was a good investment. They got it at a good price. Its value had gone up a lot and she didn't want to let it go. But she honored that. She's, I understand that my husband wants to sell it. I see where he's coming from. but they just really need to sit with it, pray on it, think about it, and find out what's the best solution to forward for their family.
And that's good because it's practical. They are literally taking these concepts and now using them in real life in a situation that could actually have blown up. Yeah. And everybody wants to have their way.
And Pessa, I wanted to piggyback on that question because actually Roger and I have a podcast as well. It's called We Love Our Family, But Damn.
Perks. Yes.
But the funny thing is that we actually had an episode on this specific topic, which is what happens if you find out your partner is hiding finances from you.
They're spending, or I don't know, maybe they're gambling, hiding.
Yes. And we talk about that because Roger and I actually went through that ourselves. Wow. This is when we first started dating. So Roger was doing sports gambling. And I didn't know about it. He didn't disclose it to me. And I found out through he would get really anxious every time we would watch sports. And that's when I intuitively felt like something's weird. Like
something is going on. It's not just sports, it's something else.
Yes. Yeah. Finally, he disclosed it to me. And I did feel like he was cheating on me in some way, right? Yeah. And so we talk about that in our work, in 8 Money Dates and in our other courses, but it's really that couples disclose all of their secrets or their financial things that they want to hide because it makes the other person feel seen and part of the same team, so to speak. So it is really important because it does break a lot of trust.
Yes, especially, and it gets really crazy for when we're dealing with cross-cultural couples because some of them will say, I believe the best thing is to keep peace. And if I tell, I will just start all this drama, which I just want to keep peace. So I'll keep it. She can't handle this. So I'll just keep quiet.
Yes, I love that approach because it's so true. My husband is Armenian.
Okay.
And so Armenians, what I have noticed, and how I know this is because I lived in Armenia for 3 years as a Peace Corps volunteer. Yes. So what I noticed about Armenians is that they're not as direct in terms of their communication, right? And so in the beginning of our relationship, he would not say things to me and I would take it as he's being very disrespectful. He doesn't respect me. And he would argue back and say, I just didn't grow up that way, right? We don't share these types of information. But me being from Chinese descent, we are open about everything. We talk about everything.
Correct.
Yeah, we
correct.
Are people involved. So it was a clash in our cultures for sure.
And that's something that it's hard to know that it's a problem until it happens. And then you're like, hold on. I thought the right way is to talk about it. And maybe he's thinking the right way is to keep the peace. And now you have to learn a new way of handling the same situation, like being open.
Yeah.
Yes. That actually takes us to another issue I wanted to discuss. When it comes to teamwork, there's also people talk about handling the spouse's emotions. There's a lot of talk about women being taught to manage their partners or their husband's emotions. So how does that look like in a regular marriage?
Oh, I love this. I've been really obsessed with it. It's true. I think that a lot of women have been taught either consciously or subconsciously watching their mothers do what they've been doing for many generations. I also think that women are more intuitive. We're more of a caretaker, right? So very easily we can learn to manage our partner's emotions because we think that if they feel good, if we can control their emotions, then we're safe. And to be honest with you, I think that comes from an anxious attachment style. I don't know if you're familiar with different attachment styles. Yes. Seeing that dynamic within my own parents. And I was taught that, okay, if my husband is not feeling good, then I will have to do something about it. And again, it's very unconscious, right? But what I have learned, and this is still something that I'm working on, and we've worked on this for many years, is that he is his own separate person. And it's actually doing more harm to manage his emotions because that teaches him, or it kind of trains him that he can't step up and he can't lead, right? Men to be leaders. We want more men to be emotionally attuned. And so now I have caught myself not managing his emotions, needing to just leave him be, because I also have a daughter, right? So I don't want to teach her that she needs
and we have
to. I want to teach her to manage her future partner's emotions.
And do you think this can also happen to husbands where they are also doing the same thing, managing and rescuing and controlling their wives instead of allowing honest emotions?
Yeah, Absolutely. And that happened in our relationship early on when we started dating. Kristen was figuring her way into her career, and I've been doing the same thing for 8-10 years, right? So my income was consistent, and Kristen was experimenting with different businesses.
Yes.
I supported us financially, and I also supported Kristen's business ventures, and yes, it created a lot of resentment. So I would help Kristen start a new business, whatever it was. For example, she sold stuff on Amazon. So
yes,
I helped her, maybe supported her financially and gave her some money to get that going. And I wasn't doing it from a place of wholeness and completeness. I was doing it expecting something in return. In my mind, I was expecting her to, for example, I expected her to stick with this business for 5 years, right? So I'm like,
because you,
that's what I did.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I did. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I'll support her. So stick with this for 5 years, 10 years. She'll make money, and then we'll be a dual income and everything will be good. So
yep,
1 year later, when she's, I don't want to do this anymore.
She's like, what are you talking about?
I'm like, I was upset. So I would keep supporting her financially, and I would have these expectations in return that if I help her, she's going to do this. So yes, rescuing. So instead of saying like,
yeah, hey,
I trust you can figure how to do this on your own. I jumped in and did it for her. And when she didn't behave or she didn't do things that I expected, then I would.
Yes. And that's very hard, because there's always, especially when it comes to money, there's always that feeling of either a return of investment, but even if it's not a return of investment, there's a feeling like, okay, I'm giving, there has to be something I'm getting.
Yeah. And then I was going to say that Roger talks about this in one of our episodes, but he talks about the nice guy syndrome, which is basically, and he learned that. Do you remember?
No more. Yeah. It's just a book. No More Mr. Nice Guy. My life.
I think I've seen it, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
It's a great read.
So it basically, it's about like how people pleasers will give, and they create some kind of contract in their heads without communicating it. It's all in their heads. About the other person, and they're keeping score in their head. And then when that person doesn't do what they like to do, they get angry or they get resentful.
And blow up.
Yeah, because of that. They think that they're being a nice guy, but in a way, it's really damaging because the other person has no idea what's going on.
What they're how they're trying to control the other person without saying it, but in a way, it's a control too.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, it's a control. So what do you guys mean when you say polarity? Because that will also bring us to the question of like having unity without sameness.
Yes.
In your marriage and in your life.
Yeah. So the best way to explain polarity, yes, I think of it like the analogy of the egg and the sperm, right? In biology, the egg stay still. The egg is not doing anything. The egg is emitting some kind of energy to attract sperm to her. And then obviously the sperm is the pursuer. It's moving towards the egg. And I truly believe that when it comes to this day and age, a lot of women have taken a different role in their relationship. And based off of cultural standards, a lot of women are now earning more than men, which is fine, by the way. They have more power, right? But they have taken more of a masculine demeanor. And when it comes to a relationship, I really believe that there needs to be some kind of polarity, mystery, action for the relationship to be thriving, right? And so it doesn't feel like roommates and you're not just mothering your husband, right? Because that's not attractive either. So basically, in my terms, polarity is when a couple is able to maintain that attraction towards one another and still be working as a team, still being able to have a flourishing marriage. And that is really important, because I think that most women want to be pursued by a man. If you can ask any woman out there, I am 100% positive that it's not fun for them to be the one chasing a man, right? And I think that men inherently, and I can't speak for men, but you can maybe speak on this.
Yes.
From my experience, I think men want to be the one that are pursuing, right?
Pursuing.
Yeah.
And so this is very important, because it leads us to the roommate a couple becoming a roommate, and we are trying to prevent that. So yes, there's this polarity. And then, so how can we know that there's a warning sign that we are losing this polarity? Mm-hmm. And so what are the warning signs that the husband and wife are becoming just good household managers, but they stopped relating as lovers?
Do you want to answer that one?
Yeah, obviously, I would say one of the first things is, how often are you intimate? If you're not regularly intimate, then maybe you get lost a little. And of course, every relationship goes through different phases, and maybe there's
phases. Yes.
Yeah, it's not. But in general, I think how intimate you are, how often you're intimate, that can be a great barometer of how, where's the polarity.
Yes.
And if it's been months of, then I think it's time you got to change it up. You both got to do something to get that spark back.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, and can I add?
Sure.
So I also think that how often a couple is playful with one another is also a sign of how their polarity is at home, because roommates are just managing a household together, right? They're paying bills. They sleep in separate bedrooms and they just mind their own business. Sometimes they hang out. But I think that it's really important that a married couple is still flirting with one another, playful, they're laughing, especially with kids, right? With kids involved, a relationship can take either turn. One, which is it becomes where the mother is doing everything, or it just, I don't want people to think that's what happens when you get married and have kids, because that is the opposite of our dynamic. We're very much very intimate, as well as we're very playful with our kids. And playful
going on dates. Yes. Yeah, going on dates.
Yes.
Turning your phone off, going on a date, being asking additional questions.
Yeah. And then buying flowers, right? I love flowers. Not every woman loves flowers. Roger still does a really great job of buying me flowers and understanding my love language. So those things, I think, is what polarity is.
And one husband says, it sounds like what you are doing is forcing this artificial romance on our marriage. Like he called it just, it's artificial, it's not real. How do you, if somebody said that you are just forcing an artificial romance on our marriage, how would you answer a question like that?
Oh, go ahead.
I would ask, do you want to improve your intimacy? Do you want to improve your polarity?
Yeah.
So if you want to do that, then you have to do the actions that lead up to that. So I don't, what do you think? It's an interesting question.
In my mind, if someone thinks something is artificial, it's because they have not experienced that yet in their own relationship, right? So for them to not believe it, that means that they must have grown up and only saw something one way. And so they don't even think it's possible. So the first thing I would probably do is ask that person, why do you think it's not possible? And what if it's possible? And what if I can give you a few things that you can do today to change your perspective? I would start off small with that person, because that person already does not believe to be true, right? So when someone is already stuck on their beliefs, I like to think of beliefs as tables. Think about a table and the legs of the table. The more legs there are to a table, the more it supports the flat table area, which is the belief. So when you want to disarm a belief or debunk a belief, you have to knock off some of the legs, you know, gently or slowly by debunking that belief. But to answer that person's question, give them certain tools to do immediately, and to see what kind of changes that they can have in their relationship.
And we talk a lot about date nights, but you talk about the 8 money dates, which is like a nice play on date nights, because it's always date night, but there's now the 8 money dates. So can you tell us a little bit about this? And is this really a date night, or I'm just going to be stuck with budget work and workshop? Like, what is going on here?
Do you want to share, or...
It's your baby. You should
share it. So I created 8 money dates because Roger and I were having trouble talking about money in a productive way. We would always have arguments around it, and it was a heavy topic in our marriage and in our partnership. And because I was a wedding planner and I had so many experiences for other people, I was like, I wonder if I could make money conversations between husband and wife fun and intimate. And so I experimented with our own marriage at first. And Roger, I'm going to let him speak on it, but he loved it. And he kept asking, like, when can we go on our next date, our next money date? So that proved to me that men can actually be very excited about going on dates and planning dates. But essentially, eight money dates it's an experience. Going on eight different dates that will help you talk about money in a more sexy and intimate way. And it is actual dates. I curated these dates where it's a scratch and reveal experience, and it will tell you whether you need a babysitter if you have kids. And then the dates are very much intentional and it's guided. And I think that dates are amazing, right?
Yeah.
With your spouse, it's very good. One thing that is lacking when it comes to a normal date is being able to talk about hard conversations without it having to be heavy. And so with eight money dates, that's the goal. And the idea is that couples are going through eight dates. It's a journey, and they feel much more connected, more intimate afterwards. And it's just a fun experience.
Are you there, or you just send them to specific places that you have already decided? How does that whole thing work when they sign up for the eight money dates?
So once they sign up for the experience, they're being routed to an app, right? So you download the app, and then each app will you reveal the plan. And then one person is the planner. And then the app tells you who is the planner, who's the one that's receiving. And then in there, it's literally walking you through what that date is going to entail. And then what's cool is that I connected it to Google so that depending on which state and which city you're in, it will recommend places based off of the date and what you're supposed to be doing. So I don't want to reveal too much, obviously, because it's also mysterious. Couples know exactly what they're doing, as well as what to look forward to. So what's amazing about it is that there's a planning portion to it, and then there's a mysterious portion to it. Because I do think that when it comes to polarity, there needs to be some mystery to a relationship. That's what creates that attraction. That's what makes me look forward to these dates with Roger.
Okay. So do you know can you tell us, like, maybe one conversation from your eight money dates that was such a breakthrough that you are like, man, this is what I believe other couples can have?
Yeah. One of the dates is, again, not to give away too much, but one of the dates is talking big picture stuff, going somewhere nice, doing something you don't normally do. So already you're priming your brain and you're priming your body. Wow, I'm somewhere new. I didn't know this place existed. It just opens up. I feel like these pathways in your mind where you're open to things. And at dates, you talk about big picture things like, what's our dreams? What's our goal? What do we imagine for this? So some of the dates, most of them actually, it's not even budgets or spreadsheets, but it's these deep conversations that we don't normally have. Mm-hmm. Our vision for our future. What do I envision in 5 years? What does she envision in 5 years? Where we're going to be at financially? Where do we want to go? What's an important thing we want to do? What's important to us financially? So having these deep conversations, and again, all the questions are already in the app, right? So you don't have to think about it. You just go.
Okay.
Kristen has already given the questions to create that experience. She's telling you where to go, what to ask. You just have to go with it.
Yeah. And I would also piggyback on that and say that most couples may think, why can't I just have this conversation on a normal Sunday, right? But the truth is that I have found that couples work better in a structured container, right? They like to be.
Okay.
And so it's much more potent when that conversation happens in a memorable date versus just on a Sunday when you're folding laundry, right? And I also included somatic practices. So most of the time, people think that it's just verbal talking. But then when you are experiencing a new place with your partner, like what Roger said, it opens up something in your neural pathways that allows you to dream bigger, right? Something has changed in your body. We all know that things like scent can create a memory in someone's nervous. Yep, exactly. So imagine if you're able to use all your five senses when it comes to these types of dates, right? That's also why some people, when they go to a place and it has a very specific scent, they remember that place. Idea of this is that it's not just talking and conversations, but these dates are curated so that you're using all five senses and it's much more memorable, and you're more likely to take action together as a team.
I like what you've done, because what you're creating is what they call a peak experience. They are out of their home where they'll be just folding laundry, and there's some routines in your house There's a way you fight, there's a way you argue in your home, and you're going to a new environment. It's a clean slate, and then you can start, I don't want to say talk about money, but you can have this one day of the 8-day date.
Yeah.
8 money dates. So just for the couples listening, what one honest conversation every couple should be having this week if they want to be more connected when it comes to money and also their marriage? What's the one conversation they should be having this week?
I would say, first of all, if you want to try out 8 money dates, definitely check it out, because I think it's a very great way to have something contained as an experience. But to answer that question, I would say knowing your values, your individual values and your values as a couple. So I talk on one of the dates guides the couples into doing this specific activity. But I think that when two people are managing finances together and a life together, that each couple or each person knows what they really value so that they can make decisions based on those that value versus just making decisions based off of how they feel, right? So Roger and I really came through a breakthrough when it came to our finances and what we should spend on when we understood what mattered to both of us. Because, and then also too, because you're in a relationship, your partner can have a different value. They can value different things than you. And if you don't have this conversation, then you would constantly be frustrated at your partner when they do something because you think that, okay, they should agree with me or they should know that this matters to me. But until you have that conversation, you'll just never know.
So where can listeners go and learn about the 8 money dates and also follow your work? Because the 8 money dates is very intriguing.
Yes. So you can go on 8moneydates.com to check it out. You can read more about it. And then Roger and I actually host a weekly podcast as well. It's called We Love Our Family, But Damn. And you can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, and
then Substack.
Substack as well. So if you also want to have more tools in your tool belt, Substack is a great resource as well.
Okay. And I've heard a lot about Substack. It's just, I haven't gotten there yet.
No worries. Yeah.
That's okay. There's so many platforms now, so it's hard to keep up. But yeah, we're on Apple, Spotify, Substack.
I'll do that. And so when you go to Substack, I'll search for 8 money dates.
You would search for We Love Our.
We'll do that. And you'll send me all the information and we'll help all our listeners be able to get this 8 money dates, because I think it's going to be such a big game changer when it comes to money. So in closing today, one thing we've learned is in today's conversation that unity does not require that you have sameness. Mm-hmm. And a husband and a wife can share loyalty, direction, and responsibility without becoming roommates, managing each other's emotions, and pretending that their differences does not exist. And the goal is not merely to operate the household successful. The goal is actually to remain honest, connected to each other, keep that attraction going, and also face difficult issues together. Don't hide these things. And we really enjoyed having Christine and Roger today. And until next time, bye and God bless.
Thank you. Appreciate it.